10 past 8, the morning show with Greg Berg is next. Support for the WGTD Morning Show comes from Carthage College, home of the Aspire program and its multifaceted approach to career preparation. The new program is designed to cultivate leadership and entrepreneurial skills while empowering each Carthage student to shape a custom career development plan from the first days on campus. Learn more about the Aspire program online at carthage.edu/aspire. The Morning Show with Greg Berg is next.
And we welcome you to the Thursday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. Today we're going to explore how theater can be taught in a virtual environment, in this online environment necessitated by the COVID-19 crisis. I'm really pleased to be able to speak with two members of the theater faculty at the University of Wisconsin-Parkside and with two Parkside students to get both perspectives on this situation. We're going to begin with Jody Sikas, who is Associate Professor of Theater Arts at Parkside, and with Lindsay Gallagher, who is one of the students in his scene painting class at Parkside. Lindsay happens to be from Kenosha, a proud graduate of St. Joseph's Catholic Academy. I began my conversation by asking Professor Sikas to describe the first conversations that happened between him and his colleagues in the theater department when it first became clear that COVID-19 was going to impact them.
Well, I think right away, it was a lot of heavy panic, which then, after a little bit of calming down, was then mild panic. Because, as teaching theater is it's a very interactive activity, be it acting classes, directing classes, my scene painting class, stagecraft class, which I also teach. One of our professors teaches stage combat this semester. And so we knew in the early stages, it was day by day. It's sort of, let's see what the word is the next day. And then, let's see what the word is next day, until it finally came down that, yes, we were going to have to go fully online. And we just knew that we would have to adapt. My option for scene painting class was either just to cancel it or cut it off at that point in the semester and say, okay, you're not going to learn anymore. But I thought that would be a disservice to the students. And so I came up with a way that the students could still progress in their learning. And that seems to be going pretty well. The stage combat professor, Brian Gill, for example, is doing videos of him doing the techniques. And then the students do this at home with essentially wooden dowels that they were provided. And then they video themselves doing the techniques, and that's how that class is progressing. And similar thing with acting classes. So the department as a whole is making the adaptations. We're figuring it out.
Mm. Very well said. And you mentioned parenthetically before we began recording this interview that part of your teaching load today involves an array of one credit courses, I think, that actually, if I understood you correctly, were already being taught online. And if that's correct, if I'm remembering that correctly, then in a sense you had at least a tiny little step ahead of probably a lot of your colleagues at Parkside in terms of at least having to have done this a bit already online.
Yes, for those one credit CAD classes, there's three of them for three different softwares. And yes, I've been teaching those. This is probably my sixth time doing them, and it's all tutorial based, and they were fully online. Mm-hmm. So the students watch me doing the teaching, and then they turn them in. So yes, at least that one was already taken care of, so that
right.
made me happy.
Right, but some of these others, an interesting challenge, which we'll dig into in just a moment. Lindsay Gallagher, again, a sophomore at the University of Wisconsin Parkside. It's always good to be able to get a little bit of student perspective on what this experience is like. Let me ask you kind of a comparable question to what I asked Professor Sikas, namely, what are your recollections of early in this crisis when it started to become clear that most likely something was going to happen in terms of how education was going to be delivered at a place like the University of Wisconsin Parkside? What was the first notification that you received that things were going to have to change?
The first notification we received was actually email during scenic painting. So we were all
in class.
We were working on our next project. Originally, we were doing 4x4 boards, and we were going to do a group a partner project. So we were working on that with our boards together, and we were drawing out lines. And then we got an email, and we're like, "Oh my goodness!" So then the panic set in, and it was really hard at first because, especially scenic painting, I was like, I took this class to see if in the future I wanna paint, if I wanna make that my career in the theater. And I was getting really upset because I was like, oh, now I'm not gonna be able to like actually get what I want out of this class. So it was really upsetting also thinking about all the productions, because we're like, oh, are the shows just gonna get canceled? It was all up in the air, and everyone was all the freak out was happening during scenic painting, and we're like, what's going on? Should we even work on this project? It was lots of panic during that moment. But luckily Jody was there, and we started talking with him, and he settled us down, and it was just really inspiring to hear Jody during we had a all theater company meeting, and just to hear like, oh, how is scenic painting and costumes going to get through this? And then hearing that Jody was going to do tutorials was just really awesome, because I was like, I'm gonna still experience this class and not say have to take it again next semester, not being able to take a different class instead. So I was just really happy to hear that after being so panicked.
Right. So you are taking, of course, more than scenic painting this semester. Before we dig into scenic painting itself, mm-hmm. tell us what courses you are taking right now at Parkside, and kind of the varied experience that I suspect you've had from course to course to course over what I'm assuming are probably several different disciplines.
Mm-hmm. So I was already taking an online science course, so that pretty much stayed the same. My teacher actually was very understanding about everything happening and did cut back on some of our assignments as well, just understanding everything we're going through and that we're getting like a bunch more assignments online. So just to kind of compensate for all the panic and things, they did cut back. So that was really cool. So yes, I had that science class online already. And then I had English 102. And then Principles of Design, which is another theater class, costumes, another theater class, and then scenic painting.
Very good. For those of you just joining us, I'm speaking with Jody Sikas, who is Associate Professor of Theater Arts at the University of Wisconsin Parkside, and Lindsay Gallagher, who is a sophomore theater major at the University of Wisconsin Parkside, originally from Kenosha, graduate of St. Joseph's Catholic Academy. And I'm assuming, Lindsay, that your love of theater has something to do with the experiences you had at St. Joseph's. Tell us quickly about that.
Yes, I was a part of all things theater throughout all of high school, even a little bit of middle school, but it was mainly you were allowed to do it in high school. I did all of our shows. I worked my way up to being stage manager senior year, and it was just a real blast learning the fundamentals at that high school.
Very good. And you've made a good choice in terms of a very strong theater department, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. So, Jody Sikas, let's talk for a moment about what the course scene painting, is that what it's called?
Yes, scene painting.
Yes. So tell us, first of all, even apart from the whole online matter, just when life is normal, what is covered in this particular course?
Sure. So in the theater world, in the entertainment world, including film and television, there are set designers or production designers who design the sets, and then those get constructed. But then there are also what are called scenic artists, who are the people who paint all of the scenery. And so things that I'm teaching in this class are applicable to both theater, film, and television. And it's teaching faux finishing techniques. The basics of perspective and layout is sort of where we begin to be able to do what appear to be three-dimensional backdrops, for example. And faux finishing techniques, like how to do fake brick or wood or concrete, things like that, marble. And so it's learning all these different techniques and how they can be applied in these different industries. So it's, learning all the different skills.
So in a typical semester where there would not be this sort of interruption or drastic shift in delivery, how would this be taught? I mean, the skills that you just outlined, what would the typical class period sort of look like, and how would the typical class period be spent?
We meet 2 days a week for an hour and 20 minutes, 22 minutes. And usually, so for each individual project, I will do a demonstration one class period, which usually takes around an hour and then leaves 20 minutes for them to like start prepping for it. And then I try to leave 3 to 4 class periods for them to work on the project in class with me there, being able to give them instant feedback and tips and guide them as they are doing this. We have 16 people in the class this semester. And so we basically completely take over the scene shop and one of our theaters. Because each of them are painting on a 4-foot by 4-foot panel, because scene painting isn't a small canvas painting, it's painting large pieces of scenery. So that's why I have that scale. It's they get a lot of in-class time because I want to be able to give them that feedback. Hmm. And then there are a number of projects.
Right. And so it's a combination of learning about how to do these things, and then it's also the doing of these things. It's learning about painting a realistic looking fake wall so it doesn't look terribly fake. And then beyond that, it's actually doing that. Then
actually doing it, yes.
Painting a fake
Correct.
Wall doesn't look too fake. And so, yes. As we said, you suddenly found yourself having to shift this course into an online format. Tell us about some of the most significant alterations that you had to make, both in, I assume, maybe your expectations and also the means by which to deliver this and give the students a rich experience.
It took me a little while to wrap my head around what exactly I was going to do. I came up with different thoughts. There are a number of Facebook pages that popped up for theater teachers and what to do about this. So it's all around the country. People are getting together and putting their heads together. Ultimately, what I decided on was to continue the course, but I would have to do all my demonstrations in video format and put them up on Canvas, our online learning environment. And then I would need to provide all of the students with all the materials they would need to complete the remaining projects in the class. The first thing that I had to accept was that the partner project that they were already probably a third of the way through we just couldn't do anymore. So they got as far as they got. When Lindsay was talking about that day that everyone got the email, and probably halfway through class, and no more productivity happened in that class. Just a lot of talking.
Yeah.
So that project had to go away, and then just out of partly time consideration and partly what my goal was for the project, I had to eliminate the project, which in the face-to-face version, all of the students would paint a 4-foot by 6-foot muslin backdrop, which is what backdrops are made out of, and using drop painting techniques, which are different than painting hard scenery, for example. So that was a skill set that I want them to learn, but there was no way to have them do that at home. Because of the scale and the materials that would be needed. So unfortunately, that had to go. But on the upside, there are two upsides that I can think of. One is I don't think they're sad that those two projects went, because everyone's life has just been turned into chaos a little bit because of having to adapt to all of these things, not just school, but everything else going on in their lives. So I'm sure they don't mind having two fewer projects. And I was happy to provide that because I'm going through the same thing. So it allows them to find a little more time to do these. The other upside is that this forced me to do something I've been meaning to do for years for this class, which is to do what's called flipping the course. So the student's homework is to watch the videos, and then in class, they actually work on, all they do is work on the projects in class with me there. So that way I'm not taking up class time to do the demonstrations, and allows the students more time in class to work on them with my mentorship. So I've been meaning to do that for years, and now at the when all is said and done here, I have the latter half of the semester already done.
Wow.
On video.
Yeah.
So that,
and I suppose one advantage of that as well is that somebody can take that video presentation you've made of demonstration of whatever, and they can stop it and rewind it and watch it again and watch it again and watch it again, and really digest it perhaps even better than they might if it was just a one shot, listen to this, watch this, okay, here you go. I could see how this might be actually a more richly beneficial experience for the student.
Yeah, and that's why it's been a goal for a while, but I've just never been able to find the time to do it, and now I've been forced to find the time to do it. And I break them down into segments. So for like painting faux brick, that's probably 6 different 15-minute videos for the brick portion of it. And then they can, if they forgot one of the steps, they can just go to one of those 6 videos, and they're all labeled, so they can rewatch that. And also what I've been doing is they have to mix paint. And so for that, I have you can't see my hands, a paint mix card with formula written on it that I just hold up to the camera, and they can pause it there and write those things down.
Huh, fascinating. So Lindsay Gallagher, tell us what it has been like to be on the receiving end of all of this. And first of all, I took from your smiles and laughter when Professor Sikas talked about the elimination of a couple of projects that indeed that probably was welcome news to you and your classmates.
Yes, while it does stink that we're not able to learn those certain techniques, just how everything's playing out time-wise, it was really nice to not have that stress of the final project.
So tell us what the actual doing is then, in terms of the kind of things you've been working on and what it's felt like to be working on them in your own home instead of in the studio that would be the location at Parkside.
So being at home, I realized how nice it was to work in the shop because all the paints are right there, the paint sinks are right there. So being at home, we have all the paint containers that Jody gave us, but I like take over the whole kitchen when I mix my paints, and it's just really convenient, everything being right there at school. And I was like, wow, I totally took that for granted. And then when it comes to actually painting, for me at home, a lot of the different techniques we in our painting, we need to do a spatter technique, which causes lots of little drips of paint to go everywhere. So that is something I actually have to make sure I do outside, because I can't do that in the house or in the garage, because we actually have like a Model T in our garage, so I can't get that all dirty. My dad will get mad. But so I have to make sure I go outside to do that, and then also weather dependent, I'm like, oh, I can't go outside today because it was pouring for a whole week, like last week, so that didn't really help with my painting process. But when it comes to Jody doing the videos, like you said, it's really nice to be able to pause the video or go back, because I'm like, wait, what did he just do? While at school, he may do the tutorial once, and then it's like, what did he like do during that part? I forgot. So then it's contacting other students and figuring out what to do, which like that communication part is really important too, but it's really nice in the videos to just be able to rewind and go step by step. And then also for the really hard ones, when we were doing the stone, I was having a really hard time figuring out what was going on in some of the videos, just because it's like just like a little pixelated at some points, but then at the end Jody puts a final photo of each step, so then that's really nice, it's super high quality. So then when I'm done with the step, I check with the picture to make sure it looks decent enough, because obviously it's not gonna be as good as Jody's, he's been doing this way too long, but but I get it, so that's really nice.
Very good. Yeah, that gives us a nice sense of kind of the step-by-step process that is involved in all this, and also brings to mind some potential complications that I, for one, had not really stopped to think about. Professor Sikas, I suspect in working with all of the students, you're very well aware of how Lindsay's home house situation is one set of complications, and somebody else living in some other kind of space or with a different family or whatever, maybe faces a different array of complications. And how complicated is that for you in terms of making sense of all that and figuring out who can do what, where, when? I mean, I don't envy you.
That is one of the main comments that I've been hearing from the students as they give me some feedback on this. Well, essentially how it comes down is they email me and say, I can't have this in on time because it's been raining all week and outside is the only place I can paint. And I'm being extraordinarily lenient with due dates on things. And like, I just want you to learn it. It all comes in on the last day. That's fine. As long as you do it and you learn from this, because I understand everyone's going to have different challenges depending upon where they live. Like I provided, for mixing up paint, I provided some empty little paint containers, you know, like deli containers. And I think I gave each of them five. But for one project, they needed like eight colors. And one of the students didn't have any empty like sour cream containers at home or anything to mix paint up in. So I gave her some suggestions, and I offered to like leave some at the loading dock at school that she could pick up and not be close to anyone. And so that got resolved. But yeah, each student has some challenges that they're facing for getting the projects done, and you know, personal lives and work and things like that.
Yeah. How
so flexibility is key.
Right. How difficult is it for you to assess what they have done? I mean, like for instance, Lindsay's final fake brick wall or whatever it might be, in terms of if you were in the same room and holding that in your hands or standing right there versus seeing it on a screen, how much is that a sort of a point of difficulty here?
Well, fortunately, everyone now has a camera on them at all times, and most of them are pretty high quality. And so what I have them do for submission of the projects is they have someone take a photo of them holding it and ideally smiling and not scowling. And then I have them take a close-up of it. And because they're high resolution, I can zoom really far in and I can see all of the detail and give feedback that way. The other thing that I set up is a discussion forum, which I don't think anyone's used at this point, But students have emailed me and texted me process photos to say, this doesn't seem right to me. Can you give me some guidance? And so some students have been doing that, which is good. It's not as great as being with them in the shop and being able to walk around and like in real time give them feedback. But they are reaching out to get feedback, which is good.
Yes. So what kind of difference has that made, Lindsay Gallagher, in terms of this course working out for you and your classmates?
It just kind of puts your work at a halt because you're like, oh, now I have to wait for Jody to reply, and I know he has other classes to attend to. So you're just like kind of waiting before you go to the next step on the videos because once you're done with one step, you can't go back. But he's been really good about getting back because, like I was talking about with the stones, I definitely was like, Jody, mine do not look right. How do I fix this? And then he got back to me, and then I was like, yay, it looks good now. I can go to the next step.
Lindsay, are there any ways in which you, I mean, not that as a totality you would prefer this, and not that any of us, you know, like the sad circumstances which necessitate this, but are there any aspects of this that, in a sense, you almost think work better than the in-person delivery would? Or is this more a case of just trying to make the best of what is a really difficult situation and challenge?
I think that the videos are very helpful, like I was saying, being able to pause it and go back. But again, I think the convenience of the shop and just being able to grab some sawhorses, put my piece on and start going, and then having the ability of just putting a fan on it right away, because I could be painting outside and then it's super windy, so my paint dries really fast. So then that inhibits my wet blending and things like that, because I'm just trying to finish a first coat and it's already drying before I can wet blend it. So it seems to be like I'm either outside and it dries super fast, or I'm in my garage and there's no air movement so that it doesn't dry at all. So then I got to put outside to dry. So it's just kind of a back and forth of things there. But I definitely think we're all making the best of our situation that we're in. And I've ended up making a lot of like group chats with my friends. So when we have questions, we just jump right in there and it's almost an instant answer. Because we all know we have things going on, the teachers have things going on, but we've like come together to try and answer questions fast so we can all just keep moving with our work.
Lindsay Gallagher is a sophomore theater major at the University of Wisconsin-Parkside, and Jody Sikas, Associate Professor of Theater Arts. You're listening to The Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. And we're going to continue our conversation now about how one can teach theater virtually, by talking with Brian Gill, who was mentioned by Professor Sikas during the previous interview. Brian Gill is an assistant professor of performance at UW-Parkside and teaching classes in acting and stage combat this semester. One of his students is Alex Gray, a double major in theater and psychology and a student in Brian Gill's stage combat class. So Brian Gill, tell us a bit about what this has been like to reset yourself as a teacher during COVID-19. What kind of an overall challenge has this been for you, and in particular when it comes to these courses on acting that you are teaching right now?
Right. Well, the you know, the biggest conundrum was scene work, which requires a couple of people, you know, to be sharing a space and in close quarters and communicating with each other. So that was the initial kind of shock of the whole thing. I think that all professors, I would think across the board, experienced in some way, shape, or form. But I think professors in the arts, how do you make art when you have to sever essentially the human connection? So, for example, Acting 2, we focus on Shakespeare. So we had done the section on monologues and we're gearing up for scene work. Well, suddenly that becomes very restrictive under the current our current situation. So I talked with the students, and we just went back to really specifying on monologue work and on Elizabethan and Jacobean language, and finding examples. You know, I posted an example for them of Sir Ian McKellen doing one of his speeches from a lesser known Shakespeare that is just crystal clear and makes perfect sense because he's a genius. But then had some talking points, and we had an online conversation about, you know, what is it that he is doing? What do you observe that is making the language sound modern? Which of course it was when Shakespeare was writing it, and still for the most part is. I had them watch a full production of As You Like It that the Globe Theater in London did a few years ago, so that they could see what happens when you put those plays in the right environment, which is a theater that, you know, which is the Globe Theater. Shakespeare was writing for that theater, and the connection between audiences and actors. So some of it became kind of theory, but I tried to keep it as practical as possible. And the same thing with my Acting 4 class. I mean, the students, they were and continue to be amazing. It could have been so easy for them to have succumbed to the pressures and the concerns and the worry of what's currently going on, and just done the bare minimum or disappeared, or, you know, but instead they just kind of rolled their sleeves up and we just went, it allowed us to go deeper into the text and deeper into technique, deeper into folio, all of that kind of stuff. So it was really, I'm so proud of them, and the work continued, and they just took such huge steps forward across the board in all classes.
Excellent. Glad to hear it. Before we get to the stage combat matter, I want to ask our student, Alex Gray, kind of a general question about what your online learning experience has been with everything that you're teaching, kind of aside from the stage combat, which we'll get to in a moment. But what have you experienced on the student end of this?
Yeah, for sure. The first couple of weeks when all this was going down and everything was uncertain, it was a really a waiting game, because each professor was reaching out and reorganizing their curriculum and how they were going to tackle this thing, especially the harder classes like performance classes. So at first I had to, you know, wait and see how these classes were going to be different from the original syllabus and the schedule and the assignments we were going to be doing. And then switching to online-based learning, it's a lot different than in-person learning, because you have to do all the pacing yourself, and, you know, the professors can reach out and try to help you in any way they can, but a lot of it is up to you to get the most out of the class. So making that adaptation was a bit of a learning curve, but once I got used to it, like, I think I've hit a stride, and I'm feeling pretty good about the experience.
Glad to hear it. So this matter of stage combat is what we're going to explore next. And Brian Gill first, I'm afraid it has to be fairly brief, but maybe just give us a sense of the general parameters of what happens in a class like Stage Combat 2 under more normal circumstances. What are you charged with teaching your students in this course?
Sure. Well, the master plan for Stage Combat 2 was to obviously build on the techniques learned in Stage Combat 1. So the first unit was a refresher on unarmed. So I had paired everybody up, and essentially, because they had gone through the previous class, I said, I want an unarmed fight, X amount of moves, need to include the following, you know, these kind of slaps, these kind of punches, it needs to have a kick, you need to have a forward fall or backward fall, blah, 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 blah. And then they set to choreographing it themselves, as opposed to in Stage Combat 1, where I often will come up with a fight and then teach it, and then they will learn it, and then they will perform it. So I then would do individual coaching with the pairs, with the fighters, they would go off and rehearse it. They would come back. We'd rehearse it in class. I would give notes. They would give observations for themselves. And then the second unit was intended to be rapier dagger. So they would have blades in hand. And then the third unit, the plan was for, it's called a found object fight. So they can beat the devil out of each other with an umbrella and a toilet bowl cleaner, whatever they want. So we had gotten through unarmed, and that went really, really well. They were really good fights. And Alex, we were in day one or day two of Rapier Dagger. Was it one?
I think we got like 2 days in.
2 days in?
Yeah.
Which was drills. They're all based on numbers for attacks and defenses. So we had gotten through a class of Rapier Dagger drills, and then the word came down that we were starting spring break early and that we needed to adapt to online. So that was where we stood. And so it became trying to rethink, okay, how can we continue to move forward with training with these student fighters all being separated from each other?
Right. So in other words, how do you have a fight? How do you stage a fight? I mean, a physical fight, when you are the presumably the only person in the room.
Exactly. Yeah.
Of all of the challenges I've heard of in COVID-19 involving educators, I'm not sure there's anybody facing a tougher challenge than that.
It's just bizarre. So, I reached out to some of my fight colleagues within the Society of American Fight Directors, wherein I hold a rank of advanced actor combatant. You know, I talked to some fight directors, I talked to some stunt folks that I know, just trying to generate some ideas. And again, similar to acting, some of what we ended up doing was going back to theory. Because one of the things with stage combat, you have to not only learn choreography, but you have to have the ability to break it down, to study it and to analyze it. So one of the first things I thought was, okay, we've got 6 weeks. I'm going to pick 5 to 6 iconic fights from film and television. And then I am going to pick specific discussion points. That ranged everything from discussion that we just had was the famous sword fight from Princess Bride, the I am not left-handed fight.
Right.
And my question to them was, this is probably at this point the most iconic sword fight in film. And that was the goal. Rob Reiner wanted to make the greatest sword fight in film history. So explain to me, what is it about the choreography of this fight and the acting of this scene that has made it the most famous fight in film history, arguably? We did a scene from Marvel's Daredevil. There's this amazing 7-minute long fight scene that was done in one take. No editing. And my question was, how does the reality of real-time fatigue affect the storytelling of the fight? So again, we went back to theory. I tried to get them to look at fights technically and specifically and kind of explain to me the choreography and the rationalizations. And then I also, they had a different drill, two different kinds of drills that they had to do every week. One was with Rapier Dagger. They had to do attacks and defenses. And then one was with bokens, which are practiced katana, practiced samurai swords. They're made out of oak. But again, it was, it was guys find two sticks, or I don't care, a cucumber and a carrot. I don't care, but there's your rapier, there's your dagger. So I filmed myself doing the drill and really tried to explain it and break it down for them. I mean, at one of them, I had all the targets taped to my head and where all the targets were. I have no sense of humility when it comes to my students. So I was covered in numbers on pieces of paper. so that they could think about specificity and that challenge of, because when you're choreographing, all of the fundamentals have to be there. When you're going through a fight on your own, your targets have to be there because you will then be teaching them. So if I've got an imaginary opponent, I have to make sure, okay, my target is a 3, so that is the left bicep. And by left, I mean right. The right bicep, because it's reversed. So, you know, showing them specificity, making sure that the preps are clear, all of that kind of stuff. And then they would film themselves doing the drill and then upload that to me, and then I would give them notes, and then I would do a new drill that we would build on, and then each one, they would do the one they just did, they would do the new one, and we'd progress. Wow. Sorry, you said short. That wasn't short.
Well, no, it's a complicated business, and yeah. I'm glad you've taken us into this kind of COVID-19 era in which things had to kind of change. So Alex Gray, tell us about your perspective as a student in this class and that shift that was made necessary by this shift to the online platform of teaching. How did that most profoundly change your experience and what you were learning and how you were learning it?
Absolutely. So yeah, me and my fellow classmates, when we first heard about the change happening, one of the classes that immediately came to mind was like, how are they going to do stage combat? But I think Brian did a really good job, and like you said earlier, it's really important to be able to analyze fights and the specificity of all of them. That's not something that we typically have a lot of time to do in the normal courses, because we're getting this hands-on partner work, which is really nice. And Brian will often, through the course of a normal class, be like, oh, check out this fight and do this. Now we have the opportunity to sit down, talk about it, and with our classmates, and think about it critically, which I got a lot of value out of, actually, having that every week. And then the drills, at first I was like, oh no, this is going to be hard with just, you know, we don't have a partner, we're just going through the motions. But Brian, every week, would give us notes, like he said, and we were able to work on specific things like the specificity of our targets and the flow of our movements and our footwork. And it's these foundational things that we get to work on that really helped through my learning of the class. And I don't necessarily know if we would have gotten to look at that so critically, because we were focusing on other things like partner work and safety, and which is also part of the drills, but it was cool to look at more of that foundational stuff. Hmm. And you know, the first couple of weeks, I was like, it was weird. It was an adjustment period doing it with no partner. And I roommate with another student in the class, and after like 3 weeks in, we were like, you know, why don't we just do these drills together too? And I was surprised at how seamlessly it was to adapt it to the partner work, and the work that I did on my own directly correlated to my work when I got back into partner work with my roommate.
So you actually have kind of a luxurious situation in that you actually have a roommate who is also studying stage combat. So you had somebody with which you could do this, whereas maybe the typical student in this class only has their little brother or their mother or whoever. I mean, you're luckier than most, I should think.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's been very useful. But it was also reassuring that like the solo work that I did and the solo work that my classmates are doing is also gonna pay off when they jump back into it with working with partners too.
Right. So in a given drill that you would have to, in which you would have to film yourself, just give us a concrete example of what that would look like, how long it would be and the kind of things you would have to do and film and then send off to Professor Gill.
Sure. So we would often have to go outside because we're using these long sticks and various household objects to represent rapier and dagger. For our rapier and dagger drills, we would go through specific targets. So like Brian said, they're numbered. So your hips are 1 and 2 and your biceps are 3 and 4. And we would make those attacks and defenses throughout the drill, and then different sorts of evasion stuff that you would use in normal choreography. So when Ben and I would go out and film, Ben's my roommate, when we would go out and film, we would practice the drills on our own, and then once we started putting them together, we would do them together. And then we would usually take a couple takes on the actual day we were filming. We would often go out multiple days throughout the week so we can get the practice in, so we could actually get the value out of the material. But when it comes to footwork, like moving forward and backward and your proper stance and attacks and defense, we would film that, and then I would, and if it took multiple takes, like if we were doing multiple drills throughout the week, I would come in and I would just put them in my like video editor on my computer where I just put them together and I send them off to Brian, or I could just send multiple videos on our learning website, Canvas. And I would send them off to Brian. He would give us a comment about notes on what we can work on. And then the next week we would get a new drill.
Incredible. Brian Gill, in just a minute or so, are there ways in which this method of teaching is actually fostering certain skills in a better way or a deeper way than if it was the standard way of being in a room together and actually doing it? I mean, are there certain hidden silver linings to this?
I think so. It forced, I can't speak for all of the students, but I have a general, and Alex, you can correct me on this if I'm not right. What I saw with the drills, for example, it seemed to force the students into a situation where they had to practice the fundamentals. You know, they're called drills for a reason. You know, ideally you're drilling for a good amount of time every single day, because what you want is for, you know, even though it's stage combat and it's designed to be safe, it looks very violent and dangerous, but it's designed to be safe, and safety is the major goal. They are traditional martial techniques. They've just been made safe, and one of the ways that they're made safe is you add distance, you know, but just enough distance so that there's a visual illusion. So it's like drilling a martial art. Mm. You know, you have to learn this stuff. It has to become ingrained in your body so that it's almost reflexive. And it was really great seeing the students from day one, where they were, you know, some of them were kind of with the bokens and the rapier daggers, they were kind of, you know, colts learning how to walk.
Right, right.
To then all of a sudden we're in the final week and they're, you know, the footwork's right and the flow is there and the targets are precise. And so I think just the foundation work,
right,
really is a silver lining.
So it's focused, it's forced to focus on the fundamentals, and Alex is nodding, so I think he is in agreement. That's silver lining to all this. Brian Gill is assistant professor of performance at UW Parkside, and Alex Gray, one of the students in his stage combat course, a double major in psychology and theater. Gentlemen, it was great to talk with both of you. I'm inspired by the story of how you've carried on through this difficulty with some innovation that has made all the difference in the world. So, and thanks for telling the story on the morning show today. It was great to talk with you.
Thanks so much, Greg. It's always good to see you.
Absolutely.
And thanks, Alex.
Tomorrow on the morning show, it is Nan Calvert's monthly visit to the program. And her guest will be Kevin Doyle, who is a rare plant botanist for the Wisconsin DNR, the Department of Natural Resources. It's one of the things we don't often think about. We often think about endangered birds or endangered mammals, but we don't often think about endangered plants. But there is such a thing. We're going to be exploring with Kevin Doyle how the Wisconsin DNR seeks to save endangered plants, and also find out what you and I can do to help with endangered plants. And by the way, on Monday's morning show,
One of the interviews is going to be with none other than Marlo Thomas and Phil Donahue, who are about to celebrate their 40th wedding anniversary. They have interviewed a number of celebrity couples, including Jimmy and Rosalind Carter and many, many others, to find out how these couples have managed to have long, successful, happy marriages. And we'll have a conversation with Marlo Thomas and Phil Donahue about that as part of Monday